Good morning, Wall Street Breakfast listeners, and happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day. With the markets closed, at least in the U.S., we decided to share another podcast with you. The following is our latest episode from the Marketplace Roundtable podcast, featuring an interview with Seeking Alpha author From Growth to Value on his growth investing approach. You can find the Marketplace Roundtable podcast wherever you get your podcasts. We hope you enjoy this, and we'll be back tomorrow morning bright and early with your usual Wall Street Breakfast podcast.
Welcome to the Marketplace Roundtable podcast. We speak with Seeking Alpha Marketplace authors about their investing styles, their views on the market, and their favorite investing ideas. I'm your host, Nathaniel Baker. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. Seeking Alpha is a website where authors from around the world share their ideas and analysis on the stock market. The Marketplace is our platform for authors to run investing analysis and idea services so that readers can take their investing to the next level. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. A full set of disclosures will be provided at the end of this podcast. For reference purposes, this podcast was recorded on Wednesday, January 15, 2020. I am joined today by a longtime contributor to Seeking Alpha, Chris, from the From Growth to Value service. The From Growth to Value service has been active on Seeking Alpha since 2016. Chris is the founder of Potential Multibaggers, a premium research service here on Seeking Alpha featuring the Potential Multibaggers portfolio. A subscription to the Potential Multibaggers research service gets you exclusive ideas, several live portfolios, a subscriber-only live chat room, weekly overviews, exclusive Potential Multibagger articles, as well as direct access to the author. You can find out more on Seeking Alpha by searching for From Growth to Value. There is a two-week free trial available. And From Growth to Value is also on Twitter, @FromValue. All right, let's get into it, Chris. Welcome to the podcast.
Well, I'm glad to be here, Nathaniel. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining. So yeah, it sounds like it, from the sound of it, From Growth to Value implies a couple of different theories here of investing and strategies. So why don't we start off and you tell us about your investing strategy?
Yeah. Well, I love the question in that sense that, I mean, it has indeed several implications. I mean, one of the implications is that I look at growth and value, but also something else that already is some sort of pinnacle of my investing style, and that is that if you have growth stocks and you hold them for a very long time, they become value stocks. You know, if you look at stocks like Walmart was a growth stock for a long time, but now it's a value stock, for example. So that's already very important in my investing strategy, holding on. But before we start, maybe I just want to say something. There is a lot of confusion, I think, about investing in that sense that a lot of people try to convince other people that their style of investing is the best one. I don't think that. I mean, you have to find an investing strategy which fits you and your personality. And I heard on Invest Like the Best, the podcast of Patrick O'Shaughnessy, that there are 300 investing strategies that consistently beat the market. And I think that it's important that you find the one that fits you. So I was actually more of a value investor at first, but I found that it didn't fit my personality. It didn't fit who I am. I'm forward looking, I'm optimistic, and well, that being said, my strategy is actually based on optimism. And a lot of people concentrate too much, in my opinion, on pessimism, on the bad news. You know, if you look at the news in general, it's often very bad and pessimistic, and you know, the world's going to hell, etc. But if you look at both reality and the stock market, actually they both go up and they get better and better and better. Yes, there are setbacks. Yes, there are things which could be better. But in the long term, everything gets better. And if you know that, you're already in a minority. I mean, the majority of people focus on the short term, and they focus on the bad news. They focus on everything that could go wrong. And what I do is I focus on the winners. And that's also why I try to, first maybe I have to explain what I mean by focusing on the winners. If you have even one multi-bagger in your portfolio, that means your portfolio is going to do a lot better than any benchmark you take. You know, if you in 2000, if you had Amazon in your portfolio and you held on until now, well, no matter what other stocks you took, you will do very well. Mm. And that's actually what I try to do with potential multi-baggers. I think the name itself already says a lot. I try to find multi-baggers. Inherently, there will be losers as well, but you will always have losers. Even if you have a value stock, you also will have losers because they're value traps and you hadn't seen it, etc. And the difference is because of the potential of those multi-baggers. If you focus on the good things and you try to crank up even the winning side of investing by looking at stocks of companies that grow very fast, and you do the opposite of most people who do growth investing or practice growth investing, that is holding on and not selling when, you know, it doubles or so, or 30% up or whatever. If you just hold on for very long periods and you even add to your winners, then I think you can have a few stocks which can mean everything. And if you look at potential multibaggers, I said that before I started the series, because the first 10 articles were free on Seeking Alpha. And I said that before, and I wrote a rather theoretical article first, which still is free even for not premium members, because it's about several tickers. And I already wrote there that, by the way, the title is "This is Why You Should Have Growth Stocks in Your Portfolio." And the title already says something, namely that if you take a few good growth stocks, even if you pick very bad other growth stocks, then you will do better than the market. Now, of course, with my service, with my marketplace, I try to weed out the losers as much as possible. But inherently, some things don't work out as well you think they will work out, and you will have losers. But you know, I picked Amazon for Shopify, sorry, at I think $77. It's at 420 now, and that's just, I mean, May 2017. If you have a few of those in your portfolio, well, it will do very well, and you know, the results are there, and that's there's an alpha, and well, it's Seeking Alpha, right? there's an alpha of 33% versus the S&P, which is not bad, I think. And then, of course, if the market turns down, and that's the pessimistic sign, which will come eventually. Yeah. We will never know when, but it will come. Well, okay, you know, those stocks will go down probably a lot more than the market. But well, in the long term, I think they will do great. I mean, if you bought Amazon Shopify. But you know, Shopify is the new Amazon. So if you have Shopify, well, it can go down. If the market goes down 25%, Shopify can go down maybe 50%. But sure, you will still be up. You know, I'm not that good at math, but you know, what is it, 200% then or so? So that's something that some people don't realize, that that they always look at the most pessimistic part, as if you always buy at the top and never scale in. I always scale in over years and years in stocks. So, and that's also if you have a stock and it goes up five times, for example, let's take a theoretical example. You take two stocks. They both cost $100, and 3 years later, one is up five times. And the other one is minus, I don't know, 60% or so. Well, you still do very well compared to the market. And that's actually the basic philosophy of potential multibaggers.
Very interesting. It's a challenge, obviously, to find these growth stocks. Going back real quick to your strategy here, it says here on your Seeking Alpha page, you do not care what the selection of stocks will do next year, but what the result will be in 2040 or so. So really a long-term outlook. But finding these stocks and these companies that are going to be the next Amazon, the next Shopify, is obviously a major challenge for investors. How do you go about whittling down all of the universe of potential multi-baggers to find the ones that you end up investing in?
Yeah, well, my readers know that I only include, well, or especially my subscribers know that I only include stocks in the potential multibaggers, which I think, I mean, it happens that I have held them for a year or longer for a very small position in my portfolio. Just to keep researching, if you have a small position, you're more inclined to research deeper. So, yeah, I mean, you have to look at lots and lots and lots of things. So what do? I study, I read, I listen to podcasts, I read books, I read articles. I try to keep up with everything. And there are lots of alternative ways to look at the things. Of course, the financials are important, but how happy are the people who work at the company that you're buying stock of? That's so important. Investors don't always realize that. There's also a lot of fog sometimes. I mean, for example, one of the ways in which you can check how happy people are is Glassdoor. But yeah, sometimes there's a very bad mark, or it's a low. But then if you read those things, you see that, well, it's all aimed at one manager who was fired right 3 years ago. So, you know, you really have to look into it hard and read a lot before you, well, before I have enough confidence to include them in the potential multibaggers.
Interesting. What about your background as an investor? You've been doing this for a little while. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how you came to this particular type of investing style?
Yeah. Well, it's been a quite long road, actually. I mean, I was rather passive for a long time, passive investor, and, you know, just buying the stock market. And then when my wife was pregnant, I felt a change. I mean, I don't know. It was some sort of feeling deep inside. Is that typically male? I don't know. But I really wanted something for my child, you know, and I wanted to put something away. And already, of course, there was already some investing, but I really cranked up my game, and I started reading voraciously, first as a value investor, as I said, but then I found my own style, as it were. And I'm something who's excited by new evolutions and long-term trends, and that's how I came to the growth side more of things. Although, well, and my readers know that I also have the Pink portfolio, which is still free on Seeking Alpha as well, and that's investing for our daughter. That's her real life portfolio, and well, that's where it originated from, actually.
Cool. Yeah, and I noticed some of your recent additions to the Pink portfolio that, I want to talk to you about maybe in the second half of the program. Some pretty interesting stock picks here.
Yeah, I want to make sure those are two completely different approaches, a potential multi-baggers sure. and a Pink portfolio. Sometimes readers confuse them. So the stocks in the Pink portfolio are not multi-baggers, are not potential multi-baggers at all.
Oh, okay. Okay. So let's stick to the multi-baggers then for the purposes of this conversation.
All right.
Since that's what we've been talking about. So is there anything over the past year you think it's been a pretty tumultuous year? Good year for growth stocks, good year for risk assets in general. Is there anything that you've learned in particular over the past year you think that you could now take to your investing style as we move forward into 2020?
Yeah, well, actually the same thing, but in a more concentrated form. I mean, ignore the noise and just keep on going and look at the stocks and not at the general markets. Again, there's so much pessimism and you have to look through the fog, even if there would be a recession, so what? Mm-hmm. I mean, again, there are different styles of investing and you know, if you're retired, you will invest differently than if you're still accumulating. And well, I'm 43 years old, but I still feel, you know, in my 30s or so. And well, I'm still accumulating. And again, that's me. You know, someone else of 43 can be rather conservative, and you have to adapt your own style of investing to your personality. I have seen that I attract quite a lot of young readers, and I like that a lot because, well, they are one of the target audiences for this. I mean, it's very good to think long term if you're young. I mean, I really like that. On the other hand, I have subscribers who are in their 50s and still have that, you know, energy and drive to look for long-term winners. So again, what have I learned about in the last year? I have learned a lot because that's one of the things that makes me enthusiastic about the stock market, is that you never stop learning. You keep on learning, but not particularly because of the movements of the markets. You know, the longer you see the markets, the more you realize they always stay the same. And there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of talking, and, you know, the television hours have to be filled, but it doesn't mean something. And especially not if you look at individual stocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no doubt. All right, I wanna take a quick break and come back and do a little bit more tangible, get a little bit more specific here with some stock picks if we could. But let's first take a quick break. I am speaking with From Growth to Value, who runs the Potential Multibaggers Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can sign up for the service either by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for potential multibaggers, or by typing From Growth to Value into the site search bar at seekingalpha.com. Okay, Chris, welcome back. So what is something here? We've talked a lot about optimism and about finding growth stocks and looking beyond the noise. Nevertheless, I'm sure you won't deny that there is risk that's out there, whether it's, you know, something that people should be concerned about is another question. But what is something about the markets or about your portfolio that concerns you at present?
Well, it's not something for at this moment in particular, but in general, it's very hard to, you know, it's simple but not easy to hold on to your stocks if they go down 40-50%. So one of the things that I try to do at this moment, I don't have to say to my subscribers, oh no, you really have to hold on to this stock, it's so good, because the market is doing great. But I'm very sure that at the moment that a few stocks go down a lot, that I will have to help them to hold on to their stocks, because that's really a risk. I mean, you can, especially with those fast growers, you really can lose a lot of money if you sell at the wrong time, and if you buy at a peak and then sell at the bottom. And it's typical for stocks in general, but even more for those, well, high growth stocks. And that's, I think, the biggest risk of my approach, actually.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay. So what would you say to combat that, other than just keep an eye on the long term always? And maybe, do you view that if there is a dip, do you view that as an opportunity to accumulate more of the shares?
If there's a general market dip, yes. If there's a dip in a stock, one single stock, you always have to look at what's going on, really. I mean, some things really fundamentally change. The long-term perspective. I mean, if there's a new competitor and that competitor takes a lot of your market, well, that changes the view, you know. Mm. So it, as a lot of things in life, it depends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Okay, well, flip side of that previous question, going back to a more optimistic track, what are some things that have you most excited right now?
Yeah.
You mentioned new technologies before, and yeah, so I'd be curious about that. What are some of the areas that you're most excited about?
Yeah, one of the things I always try to look at long-term trends. Technology stocks often have the reputation of going very fast, or technology in general, but actually technology is slow too. I mean, if you look at the internet, I was one of the first in my community to have internet. I think it was 1994, 95 or so. My father was a computer engineer, so he liked that, and that's why we had it at home. I was, I don't know, 18 or so then. You know, if you had to explain to people what the internet was, that was very, very difficult because mm-hmm. they didn't have something to compare it with. And if you look at the general public, well, it took well into the 2000s and nillies before the general public was on the internet. And that's actually the same thing now, and that will always be the case. You have technology geeks, let's call them, who are very, very, very excited about a certain new technology, new opportunities. But before it hits the general market, that takes years and years and years. And that's something that investors should know. So it's well, you have to find the balance between investing in new technology and the viability in the market. So that's something I try to do. And if I look at the market right now from that perspective, and if I look what are the long-term trends, then I see several things. You know, one of the most important things that I see now is unscaling. And I've read a book which was called Unscaled. I don't remember the author. It was an Indian VC guy. But a very interesting book in which he said that, well, because of the trends that we see, namely AI and genetic testing, etc., there will be unscaling. Yeah, you know, now everything is big, and the bigger the better, but it will be a lot more targeted. And you already think, I think you can already see that a bit in the Amazon Shopify thing, in that sense that Shopify is much more individual, and people hate it if Amazon shows lots of sponsored content which they don't want. And I think that's one of the first issues of or the first examples of unscaling already. But it goes a lot further. I mean healthcare, for example, you know, at this moment there are so many drugs already, and if you look at the drugs that are being developed now, what you often see is the gain is not that much. I mean, often it's about orphanage diseases, like, I mean, maybe 100 or 200 people in the whole US who have a certain disease, and that a drug is developed which costs millions and millions and millions. I mean, it's impossible that will go on. I mean, both for the drug companies, but also, of course, for public health spending. And what you will see is that more drugs will be developed, especially for that person or that type of person. So if you have a certain disease, well, you will be able to choose between several drugs, which are, oh, this is your type, you better take this. Now it's just, well, try this. Oh, it doesn't work. Let's take something else. So that's unscaling too. Another example, shoes, for example. Now you have, you know, a few thousands of pairs of shoes, which you can choose from, but, you know, they're not fitted to your feet. And your left feet can be, I don't know, a bit bigger or whatever than your right one. And, well, you have shoes which fit, but they're not perfect. If they can be, I don't know, 3D printed for you, scanned and 3D printed for you, well, that's, you know, and that's unscaling. You go to the individual again and not to the mass market. And that's actually how it has been for centuries before the Industrial Revolution.
Yeah, interesting there on the Shopify. Shopify is clearly one company that is taking advantage and exploiting that trend. Are there others that you found in your research that you can speak to that are also doing this unscaling? Like, how would an investor be able to profit from this? Like, what other companies are you seeing that you think are at the front end of this?
Yeah, well, several. But let's take the Trade Desk, for example. The Trade Desk is a typical example of unscaling because, you know, it's not a guarded wall. A walled garden, excuse me. It's the opposite. It's everywhere. And for example, you know, one of the most important trends in the Trade Desk, Dan, is that it plays on connected TV. And connected TV is unscaling because you choose what you want to see. It's not, you know, CNBC or whatever, or whoever who chooses what you will look at. You know, no, you choose your programs. And the Trade Desk is one of the, well, one of the companies that will take advantage of that because they can diversify their ads to that public. So that's one. Another example which comes to mind is, for example, Square. I mean, now we have big banks and everyone is the same for that bank. And you're just a number. And the Wells Fargo scandal show that again, you know, as long as the numbers, if you're a customer, even if you're not a real customer, it turned out. But people are sick of that. People want to be individual. And with Square, you get your own bank in the long term. It's not, they have applied for a banking license, but it's not there yet. But in the long term, I think Square will be some sort of new bank in which you can choose all the options that you want. You know, if you want to trade stocks with Square, all right. If you don't want to, you can choose, I don't know, Robinhood or another. And that's how people will be able to individually choose their own offerings.
Cool. Very cool. All right. So we got into it a little bit here as far as favorite, you know, some ideas that you have as far as companies that might be able to profit from these themes. Are there any favorite ideas that you have where these or other trends are concerned right now?
Well, those are already two of my favorite ideas, you know, the Trade Desk and Square. Also, because people don't realize yet the full potential, I think. For example, for Square, they have Cash App and it's not monetized that well yet. Although, in just 3 years' time, it's already the biggest source of revenue, you know. People still associate Square with the point of sale technology, but Cash App is already a bigger contributor to the revenue. Of course, the point of sale is at this moment more profitable, but that will change, I'm very sure. And what Square is doing is it's building out its ecosystem. Well, it has two, you know, the merchants and you know, the individual consumer. And once they can combine the two, they have a gold mine. I mean, one of the things that is in that book, Unscaled 2, is that, and you know, it's a popular saying, data is the new gold or the new oil. Mm-hmm. And I think the oil it is. And I think it's a good comparison in that sense that, you know, oil changed everything, the way transportation went, or, you know, with the trains and cars, etc., the way electricity was made, etc., etc., etc. And I think you will see the same thing with data. It will change everything. And, I think there will be some companies which will prosper a lot from data, and Square is actually very well positioned there, because they will have lots of data from both sides.
All right, so Trade Desk TTD, Square SQ, those are some pretty good ideas. Okay, Chris, thank you. Very interesting conversation. If you've been enjoying the Seeking Alpha Marketplace Roundtable podcast, you can subscribe through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere else you find podcasts by searching for Marketplace Roundtable. You can also give reviews on those platforms to help other investors discover this podcast. I've been speaking with Chris from Growth to Value, who runs the Potential Multibaggers Marketplace service here at Seeking Alpha. You can sign up for the service either by going to seekingalpha.com/marketplace and looking for Potential Multibaggers, or by typing From Growth to Value into the site search bar at seekingalpha.com. You can also follow Chris on seekingalpha.com and enjoy his free content there. For disclosures, I, Nathaniel Baker, I have no positions in either of the securities mentioned on today's podcast. What about you, Christoph?
I am long the Trade Desk, Shopify, Square.
Got it. Awesome. Thank you all for listening, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time.